Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourselves up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marches never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So like, you could just see 100,000, 600,000
deducted.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor." Every check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, Dawson, said, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for two straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government, plus I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. Mm. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. Is who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor driven. The radio is sponsorship driven. I said, man, let me get out of this, because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back.
I learned this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it. and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Oh, man. How about Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
By the time you met Blandón, how big were you getting? Like, how much were you buying on a regular basis?
Oh, no, maybe a couple pounds, 16 pounds maybe.
16 pounds.
Yeah, 8 pounds, something like that. At that time, pounds were going for 35,000 a pound, yeah.
By the time you met Blandón.
Construction. It's about 40% complete. Alright, so this is the second Wolfati that we have started construction on. People live in here off and on. People come and stay. They come from Airbnb or directly because they're familiar with our website. And it keeps the water out. It's not insulated yet. So it can get cold, but the amazing thing is, like, it was going to be a warm day outside. I don't know. But it's a little warmer outside, and we come in, and do you feel it's already much cooler?
Significantly.
So the thermal mass that surrounds the structure is absorbing the heat from...
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second, and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land, okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children, because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine, or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now, I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively, and you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on, with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
Okay, today and tomorrow, we're going to cover, because, you know, this is the first of the year, January, the month is almost over. Today's the 30th, and it's 31 days in this month, so tomorrow's the last day of January. But in keeping in line with people's goals, and this figure, I was having a conversation offline with somebody yesterday, where somebody that they know, they have to pay. They've got a balloon payment on a loan due. Well, yeah, it's sort of a loan. For $300,000. $300,000. So we're going to cover how to pay off a $300,000 debt. And some of you might not need that much. Some of you might not even have a loan at all you got to pay back. But the next 2 days, if you've got a significant amount of money that you owe, no matter how large or small it is, it could be for student loans, home payments, which is something that a lot of people have, behind on rent payments, reverse mortgages. We're going to discuss how to reverse engineer a debt, give you some case studies from contemporary times of what people did, as well as what some ancient examples that have been worked. What we're going to do is we're going to replay the Steve Harvey tax debt, of which we're going to take a look at that, reverse engineer that, and then go into the $300,000 debt that somebody was telling me about yesterday. And then you can apply it to anything you do. And this is going to tie into what we do with tiny houses as well. So we're going to listen to Steve Harvey, analyze this again, and then apply what Steve did to what we can do if we owe $300,000 of debt. If my board would cooperate, here we go.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005, and my accountant had gotten in cahoots And next thing you know, my accountant died, and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, we have a problem. She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I've signed and I've stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So
like,
you could just see
$100,000, $600,000
deducted.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here. Oh, man. He said, this woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. Mm-hmm. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man. Let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out to Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government, plus I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. Hmm. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling because you're going to ruin your career. because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back.
I made $3 million in just 6 months as a 20-year-old female entrepreneur, and you can too. Growing up, I was always in like the advanced classes. In high school, I was in the AP, the honors classes, and so even being separated from so many people, even starting at a young age, it definitely made me realize that I'm a little bit different. It was a little bit hard to fit in. I'm black, I'm Hispanic, I'm Muslim. I went through so many different phases of trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I remember there was a point in time where I wanted to be an engineer, I wanted to be an interior designer. My sophomore year, I lived with my dad. That same year, my brother Jamil lived with my dad, and we were always super close. First day I got there, he took me to his room, and he showed me the stack of books that he had. And one of them was called How to Win Friends and Influence People. And he's like, you got to read this book. You got to start reading. It's really going to change your mindset. It's really going to help you be successful. He had this whiteboard on his wall, and it said, I will be a millionaire by 22. And in my head, like, I was thinking, like, where did he come up with that? Like, we've never seen a millionaire in our life. Money was never something that we grew up seeing. It was never something that we were familiar with. My family never had a lot of money in any aspect. I thought that it was amazing that he had such drive and could picture a goal that seemed so far off, but to him seemed achievable. Junior year, I was living by myself. I had actually moved away from my dad's, and I was living with family friends. The same year that I was living by myself, my oldest brother passed away. And when he passed away, my whole perspective on life changed. Everything, like school, the people that I hung around, what was important to me, how I was spending each day, because I really realized that life is so, so, so short. And the fact that my brother was taken at 22, I was only 16, and he was one of the closest people to me. And so I never understood why he was taken so soon. I didn't understand it. I was going through my own grieving process. It changed everything and put life into a different perspective. I really got very selective with what I was putting into my mind, the people that I was hanging around. I got very isolated. I started really just focusing on my art, on working, and really just being alone and focusing on my family. I was asking myself, I didn't see my brother before he passed away because it wasn't winter break yet, because I had to stay in school for winter break. Was school ever that important where I didn't see my brother before he passed away because I had to be at school? You could not even finish school and your life could be over. I have other things that are more important to me, my family, my time, what I want to do with my life. Because we grow up from kindergarten to 12th grade in school, we naturally rely on like who we are as a student as part of our identity. What you start to realize is like all you're doing is giving power to someone else to tell you how valuable you are or to tell you how qualified you are. I didn't need someone else to tell me if I was worth doing a job or not, or if I was good enough to do something, because if I wanted to do something, I just had to decide to do it, and I don't need validation from someone else, whether that be a teacher, whether that be a professor, whether that be an employer, from anyone. You don't actually need validation from someone. You just have to decide within yourself that you're capable of doing it and go for it. Once I got into college and I started going through the day-to-days, I was working two full-time jobs. It was exhausting. I spent a lot of time doing things for other people. It was like I was doing my schoolwork for my teachers, but it didn't really make sense to me. I wasn't really understanding what I was supposed to get out of it. I was nannying to make enough money to survive, but it wasn't enough to do anything beyond that because I had to spend all my time working. One day I was sitting in class and I was listening to my teacher talk, and he gave us this huge assignment, and it was a predominantly white school, so everyone partnered up into these groups, and I was just sitting there by myself, and again I felt like I didn't fit in. I started like just wondering, what am I doing here? These assignments, these aren't helping me progress in the area that I want to progress in. They're kind of just like buffer time. They're just busy assignments to keep us busy. It wasn't really what I needed to achieve the success I wanted. And actually at the same
same time, I was finishing up first semester of my freshman year of college. I got an interview with this very high-profile family for nannying, and I'd never had an experience like that. And even when the experience came up, I kept asking myself, like, why me? Like, why am I getting this opportunity to work for such a high-profile family? I'm an 18-year-old who's not even CPR certified. Out of all people, why would they pick me? And my mom kept telling me, like, that's not the right mentality to have. Like, who cares if you're 18 years old? You know that you're an amazing nanny. You know that you're caring and compassionate, that you know how to care for children. You've done that your whole life. And then I started asking myself, would I rather learn from a professor or would I rather learn from a billionaire who has the lifestyle that I want and I could actually learn from him in person and see his lifestyle? So at the end of freshman year, I remember we were finishing up with classes and I was listening to these tapes and they said people who are successful make decisions quickly and they stick to those decisions. I decided right then and there, I was like, I'm going to be done with school. I'm going to drop out. And so that same day, I texted my counselor and I said, please unenroll me from all upcoming classes. And she was like, oh no, like, is something wrong? Is there something I can help with? And I was like, no, thank you. Just please unenroll me. I'll no longer be attending Maryville. If I'm not going to go to school, I have to figure out how I'm going to be a successful entrepreneur. I started reading books. I started watching YouTube videos. I was doing cosmetology. I learned how to do nails completely by myself. So after trying e-com, drop shipping, trading stock options, I finally started Airbnb. And Airbnb actually went amazing for me. I started off by renting. I actually didn't own any properties. I now have 11 Airbnbs that I rent. And even from that, I learned how to do rental arbitrage. And at first, I didn't really understand it fully, but I was learning as I went. I kind of went through the mistakes, the learning curve, figured out what worked and what didn't work. And then everyone started seeing, like, this 20-year-old girl is making five figures a month, making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a month from Airbnb without renting any properties. And everyone started asking me, like, can you teach me? Can you help me? Like, how are you doing it? If I can genuinely help someone else and make a difference in their life through something that I learned, then why not? Me and my partner, we decided to create a coaching business. Bryson played a huge role in helping in our success with Airbnb, even changing my mindset from when my brother first passed away. I was grieving a lot. I was really sad. When I met Bryson, he really helped me realize that you have to have a positive mindset if you want to attract positive things. Everyone started asking a ton of questions. So after we started our coaching business.
Okay, so today and tomorrow our topic is how to pay off a $300,000 debt. So this could apply to people. For whatever needs could be needed for students. Figure stuck in my mind because based on a conversation I had offline yesterday with somebody who will owe $300,000. They have to pay that off hopefully this year or within a year. So it can be for a balloon payment, student loans, anything that you can think of. So with Steve Harvey, he had to pay back that $22 million in a form of monthly payments of $650,000 a month. Now, we're going to use a lower figure based on $300,000. Well, matter of fact, let's start off with Steve since I did bring him up. Some people listen to this podcast for the first time. So, okay, $650,000 a month. So let's get our calculators here, and we're going to tie this all into housing momentarily, but let's lay the groundwork. Okay. Now, so $650,000 in a month, and you've got 30 days in a month, but we're going to narrow it down to 20 working days, 20 business days in a month, particularly a month that does not have a bank holiday or something like that. So $650,000 divided by 20 business days in a month, that means it's $32,500 a day. Now that figure is a little bit, it's less intimidating than $650,000 in a month. However, $32,500, that's more money than quite a few people that they don't make that in a year. But it's still less intimidating and a more manageable number to work with. Now, Steve Harvey, and to attack this, we're going to take something that we talked about yesterday. You can make this amount in a day if you get your mindset. You're going to have to get a mindset where All right, you can, let's do something simple. If I say, look, you got to come up with a dollar a day. Most people, even in developing countries, can come up with a dollar a day. All right? Because your mind has accepted that, oh, that's something that I can make. That's doable. All right? Well, the only difference between a dollar a day and $32,500 a day is your mindset. You know, number one, do you believe you can do it? And number two, do you have the skill set, or can you develop the skill sets and along with the tool sets in order to achieve that? Well, you can. Now, what Steve Harvey did was, number one, once we had to look at, in order to achieve that, you have to have the mindset, and part of the mindset is you need the skill set and you need the tool set. All right. Now, the skill that, one of the skills that Steve had, he's a communicator. One of the things he does is tells jokes. He's also a motivator. All right. But he also needs the tool set along with that. So part of the tools that he has is, number one, he has the Steve Harvey Morning Show. And one of the things that we brought up yesterday, we'll bring it up again today, is and you need to wrap your head around this too as part of your mindset. There's nothing but abundance out here. If you lack anything, is you're lacking in, put it this way, let me better say this. When it comes to abundance, there's no lack of resources. That's what I want to say. There's no lack of resources anywhere on the planet, even in Mojave Desert. There's no lack of resources. There's only a lack of awareness and a lack of resourcefulness. So if you can't see yourself earning $32,500 a day, okay, it's not because there's a lack of abundance. It's because you, individually speaking, and maybe the comfort zone that you're currently in, they are not aware of what it takes to earn $32,500 a day on a consistent daily basis. And they lack the resourcefulness on an individual basis on how to do that. Now, let's take inventory of the facts here. How did Steve Harvey do this? Well, number one, he was aware that he couldn't do it alone, and then he would have to organize a team. So the Steve Harvey Morning Show, and another term out here, asset. Assets generate income. He knew one of the tool sets that he would need to create an asset in order to do that. So the Steve Harvey Morning Show is an asset. And he had to make it into an income-producing asset. Assets generate income. Income is attracted to assets. So the Steve Harvey Morning Show is an asset that came out of the mind of Steve Harvey. It's an idea. And ordered him in, that's part of his tool set. So he took the Steve Harvey Morning Show, which it takes about, including Steve, about six people to do that morning show Monday through Friday. So he organized that. Okay. So he wasn't alone. He organized that team. Next thing is he had to get that show, the Steve Harvey Morning Show, syndicated. So he's on 100 radio stations. So, but we're going to cut that number down to 100. So let's take the number of $32,500. That's what he needs to earn in it per day. on a consistent daily basis, 20 days out of a month, Monday through Friday. So let's take 32,500 and divide that number by 100, and the 100 represents 100 radio stations, because each and every one of those radio stations has a sales department. So that means that he would need to average just $325 per day, each of the radio stations. And on the FM radio stations, because Steve was on typically during, he's on 4 hours a day. Okay. Oh, that's another number. And he's on 100 radio stations. So let's take $325. Now, 1 minute of commercial radio time on an FM station, typically here in the United States, that's going to cost you $325 a minute. Because, see, while you're doing this, everybody in your on your team, they've got to be blessed. They got to be blessed. So he had to earn more than $32,500 a day to pull this off. So let's take $325 and let's say that's a day. Divide that by 4 hours. So Steve Harvey has to make $81.25 per hour. That's a doable number, particularly when you have a team. He's got a team in the studio of six people, including his producer, and for the Steve Harvey Morning Show, which is the asset. Okay. Assets generate income. Okay. Now, the next thing is multiply by 100. So 100 times $81.25, through the Steve Harvey Morning Show, generates $8,125 per hour. The show is on 4 hours a day. So let's multiply that number by four, and that gives you the $32,500 per day times 5 days a week. That's $162,500 per five-day week times 4 months in a year. Four weeks in a month. That gives you $650,000 a month. Now, it's actually more than that. But we're going to leave it at that. So now let's take the figure of $300,000. All right. And we're going to break that down to a year, 12 months. All right. And what we're doing here, folks, is reverse engineering. All right. So that means the person would have to make $25,000 a month. So now we're breaking that down, $25,000 a month. We're not doing a 30-day month. We're doing a 20-day month. $25,000 divided by 20 working days in a month. That's $1,250 a day. All right. Now, next thing is you need to think of an income-producing asset. All right. Now, the one that I'm going to pick out is a house, a tiny house, cabin, whatever you want to call it. And that's the reason why we played the Lamar Alexander, the solar cabin. Now, he built that for $5,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the solar electric system, $5,000 total. Now, I'm saying that, and he built that by himself in 14 calendar days. All right. Now, what I'm saying is this. You can do this with cupcake, pick out any kind of asset you can think of. Steve Harvey did it with a morning show. And then he built a team to help him do it. All right. So if you built a a cabin, and you built in, well, let's say you built one cabin, and you made, when you sold it, you made a $1,250 profit, and let's say you did one a week. Okay, that gives you $5,000 a month. Okay, and let's go the long way with this. $300,000 divided by 5,000. Oh, you know, hold it. Let's do it this way. $300,000 divided by $1,250 per. You would have to build 240 cabins in order to play off that $300,000. Now, of course, let's say $300,000, and that same cabin, because that cabin probably, if you built it for five, he can probably easily turn a $10,000 profit on that. So let's take $300,000 and divide that by $10,000. He would have to build 30. So if you build one cabin a month and sold it, we're talking about a $15,000 cabin that you would clear $10,000 off of. You build one a month for 30 consecutive months. Okay, you'd have that $300,000 paid off. So tomorrow, we're going to give more examples like what Airbnb did, some examples out of the Bible, some examples that we are pulling off of YouTube. And then we're going to, you know, if you want to join us, that's what we'll be doing. And like I said, we're going to go into more detail tomorrow, but essentially how to pay off the $300,000 debt. You can apply it to student loan, anything you're dealing with. You know, even if you want to do cupcakes, we're doing little small buildings. That, because that's my lane. And the people I associate with, that's our lane. Okay, but you can apply these fundamental principles in anything, cupcake sewing, landscaping, selling, whatever. You just pick whatever your income-producing asset is. But remember these fundamentals now. Number one, there's no such thing. You got to wrap your head around this. This is fundamental before you pick out which asset that you're going to ride your horse. Number one, there's no such thing as a lack of resources. What there's a lack of awareness on your part, if you can't see it, you're not aware. So it's a lack of awareness, and it's a lack of resourcefulness. You lack the, you need to become more resourceful. Then you need to partner up with people who are very resourceful, people who can take nothing and turn it into something. Okay. People that are resourceful and people that are more intuitive or more aware than you are. You need to partner up with people if you lack that in yourself. You know, that's what partnerships are. One partner can do, well, let's give a very fundamental. Men and women to produce a kid, another human being. Men biologically have parts that a woman does not have. And women have body parts for reproduction that a man does not have. So in partnership through the union of sexual intercourse, they get together, and in partnership, they can create other human beings. It's about as simple as that. Okay. So tomorrow we're going to go more into detail. And we're going to, now we already laid out, because we'll be walking the walk as we talk the talk with this stuff. We're going to base it on $300,000. You can join along with us on applying it to your particular situation on how to pay off a $300,000 debt. And you can, you know, just follow along with us because this is what we'll be doing. And like I say, this idea basically came up in a conversation that I had with somebody right after the podcast yesterday. But let's get the fundamentals straight. There is no shortage of abundance out here, even in the Mojave Desert. What there is a lack of on an individual basis, there's a lack of awareness of the abundance, and there's a lack of awareness, excuse me, and there's a lack of resourcefulness. Let me give you another small example for shut down here for the day. Water. A lot of people buy water. I even buy water on occasion when I'm traveling, you know, at a bus station, train station, airport, something like that, okay? Because now they won't even, you know, at airports, this is the crazy thing, anything that contains liquids, at least airports that I've been through, you can't bring it on. They confiscate it. However, after you get through the security check, you can buy water or toothpaste or things that contain certain liquids from the airport vendors. So that's how that goes or whatever. But in my everyday living, to flush my toilet, to cook with, to bathe with and all that, feed the animals and all that, I don't buy any water. Yet I have enough water here where I'm at to basically supply a whole neighborhood of subdivision. However, me and my neighbors basically are the same. Most of my neighbors, including me, we're on a well. I have a well, and it cleaned, you know, so I have my own water supply. So, the reason why I have that is, well, man, I don't like paying a water bill. I don't want to pay a municipal water bill. I don't want to buy Fiji water, and I like Fiji water, but I'm at an airport, I'll buy it. But if I can bring my own, I'd bring my own. But they would confiscate it, the TSC. They would, so, you know, that's why I don't bring any, you know, I buy it at the airport after I go to security. But around town, when I grocery, no, I have my own water. I make my own lemonade and all that. I have my own water. So, and I had a reverse osmosis system, you know, to clean up and all that. Why? Because water is earth wealth. We're walking and we're driving over oceans of water every day. So if you live in a location, now you can't do this in New York City or Washington, D.C. or Los Angeles, California, but if you live, there are places where you can, though. If you live in an area of the country which are typically rural areas or semi-rural areas, I live in a semi-rural area. My side of the street looks like a suburban subdivision. But looking out the window here, and if I walked it in 30 seconds, it looks like it's a rural area, you know, with orchards and all the cows and horses and all that. It's right across the street from me. It's a 30-second walk, if that. All right? So, but we have, legally, we can tap into, now the code makes it so we have to be connected to the municipal water system, but we don't have to use it. You can have your own private system here. So me and my neighbors, for the most part, we have a private system. We have our own wells. We don't receive anything from the city, nothing for sewage or nothing like that. And we have our own private water system because an acre of land, I'm on a little bit over a quarter acre, three quarters of an acre, but an acre contains 326,000, over 326,000, I think it's 326,850 gallons of water. So now, granted, if you don't have, you know, to put a new well in, depending on what part of the country you're in, you might cost anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000, maybe $6,000 on the high end. And then you have to have, you know, somebody come out and just service it every 2 years or so. But after that initial fee, you're not paying a monthly water bill. Okay. So that's what I'm saying. You have to be, there's plenty of water. There's an abundance of it. But you have to be aware of where you can legally tap into it and what technology do you need to tap into it with. Awareness, as I've stated before, and resourcefulness. Now, if you know how to drill for your own wells, I haven't learned that yet. You know, you can make a pretty, that's a pretty good side hustle or full-time income for even a whole career. Let's see. Okay, that's all I got for you for today. Chris, are you still there? I don't know if he is.
Yes, sir, I am.
Yeah, Chris, anything you want to announce before we shut down for today?
I was sitting here, you know, thinking about the numbers that you were going with there. It went 600,000, you know, that he had to come up with a month, 300,000 that someone else needs to come up with in a year. And I was wondering, you know, about doing a number of 30,000 over a 2 month period.
Okay.
And see, you know, because that's coming down to realistic numbers of what some people could be needing.
True.
And I think that might be one of our little equations of a breakdown that we could work on.
Well, let's work on that tomorrow. Let's say, or you say $30,000 in within 2 months?
Yes.
Okay, $30,000, 2 months. And then we can use, you know, the metal buildings, metal frame buildings that you do.
Yeah.
Let's get the numbers on that tomorrow during the podcast. That will be the podcast for tomorrow.
Okay.
Because, like you said, 30,000 is there's a whole lot of people that can use 30,000.
Exactly.
And it's less intimidating in a probably easier number for us to reach. So, yeah, let's cover that tomorrow.
Okay.
How to pay off with, say, $30,000?
Yeah, $30,000.
All right. Well, that's tomorrow's podcast then.
All right, buddy.
Okay, talk to you then.
Mm-hmm. All right, bye.